On the flat roof of his house, the Mahdi sat cross-legged on a low angareb, a couch covered with a silk prayer rug and strewn with cushions. There was a screen of reed matting over the terrace to shield them from the sun, but the sides were open to the cooling breeze off the river and to provide a view across the wide expanse of the Victoria Nile to the city of Khartoum. The ugly square blockhouse of Mukran Fort dominated the defences of the besieged city. Emir Osman Atalan sat facing him, and a slave maid knelt before him with a dish of water on which floated a few oleander petals. Osman dipped water from it and made the ritual ablutions, then dismissed the woman with a wave. Another lovely Gala slave girl placed between them a silver tray that bore three jewelled long-stemmed silver cups, chalices looted from the Roman Catholic Cathedral in El Obeid.
"Refresh yourself, Osman Atalan. You have travelled far," the Mahdi invited him.
Osman made an elegant gesture of refusal.
"I thank you for your hospitality, but I have eaten and drunk with the dawn, and I will not eat again until the setting of the sun."
The Mahdi nodded. He knew of the Emir's frugality. He was well aware of the peculiar religious enlightenment and the sense of dedicated purpose brought on by fasting and denial of the appetite. The memories of his sojourn on Abbas Island was as fresh as if it had taken place the previous day, and not 3 years before. He lifted a silver cup to his lips, displaying for an instant the gap between his front teeth, sign of his divinity. Of course, he never drank alcohol, but he was partial to a drink made from date syrup and ground ginger. Once he had been lean and hard as this fierce desert warrior, but he was no longer a solitary hermit. He was the spiritual leader of a nation chosen by God. Once he had been barefoot, ascetic, who had denied himself all sensual pleasures. Not long ago it had been boasted through all the Sudan that Muhammad Ahmed had never known a woman's body. He was virgin no longer, and his harem contained the first fruits of all his mighty victories. His was first choice of the captured women. Every sheikh and emir brought him gifts of the most lovely young girls in their territory, and it was a political imperative that he accept their largesse. The numbers of his wives and concubines already exceeded 1,000 and increased each day. His women fascinated him. He spent half his days among them. They were dazzled by his appearance, his height and grace, his fine features, the winged birthmark and the angelic smile that disguised all his emotions. They loved his perfume and the gap between his teeth. They were intoxicated by his wealth and power. His treasury, the Bayt el-Mal, held gold, jewels, and millions in specie, the spoils of his conquests and the sack of the principal cities of the Nile. The women sang, "The Mahdi is the sun of our sky and the water of our Nile." Now he set aside the silver cup and held out his hand. One of the waiting girls knelt to offer him a scented silk cloth with which to dab the sticky syrup from his lips. Behind the Mahdi, on another cushioned angareb, sat the Khalifa Abdullahi. He was a handsome man with chiselled features and a nose like the beak of an eagle, but his skin was dappled like a leopard's with the scars of smallpox. His nature was also that of the leopard, predatory and cruel. Emir Osman Atalan feared no man or beast except these two men who sat before him now. These he feared with all his heart. The Mahdi lifted one gracefully shaped hand and pointed across the river. Even with the naked eye they were able to make out the solitary figure on the parapets of the Mukran fort.
"There is Gordon Pasha, the son incarnate of Satan," said the Mahdi. "I will bring his head to you before the beginning of Ramadan," said his Khalifa.
"Unless the infidel reaches him before you do," suggested the Mahdi, and his voice was soft and pleasant to hear. He turned to Osman. "Our scouts report to us that the infidel army is at last on the move. They are sailing southwards in a flotilla of steamers along the river to rescue our enemy from my vengeance."
"At the beginning they will move at the pace of the chameleon," the Khalifa endorsed his master's report. "However, once they pass through the cataracts and reach the bend of the river at Abu Hamed, they will have the north wind behind their boats and the current will abate. The speed of their advance will increase sixfold. They will reach Khartoum before Low Nile, and we cannot assault the city before the river falls and exposes Gordon Pasha's defences. You must send half of your army northwards under your most trustworthy sheikhs, and stop the infidels on the river before they reach Abu Klea. Then you must annihilate them, just as you destroyed the armies of Baker Pasha and Hicks Pasha. The Mahdi stared into Osman's face, and Osman's spirit stirred. Will you deliver to me my enemy, Osman Atalan?
Holy One, I will give him into your hands, Osman replied. In God's name and with the blessing of Allah, I will deliver to you that city and all those within.
The three warriors of God gazed across the Nile like hunting cheetahs, surveying herds of grazing gazelle upon the plains.